So happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network. We're going to switch gears a little bit and take a look at the history of the Lumberjack World Championships. The book is called Timber, the Story of the Lumberjack World Championships. And our guest with us by phone is Lou Friedman. Lou's a prize-winning sports writer. He's a former sports editor, the author of several books, and this is most recent. It's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. And again, it's Timber, the Story of the Lumberjack World Championship. Have you visited Hayward, Wisconsin? Have you seen the Lumberjack World Championship or another event held up there? Which event in the competition fascinated you the most? Do you know the name Tony Wise? That's a name that's very important to the book and to, frankly, to the community of Hayward. The guy did an amazing amount of great things for that city. And we'll learn about that as we visit with Lou Friedman. And certainly love to hear from you. Maybe you have some experiences to share relating to the Lumberjack World Championships or just Lumberjacks in general. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post there. Go to The Larry Mueller Show. You can put a picture in there. You can ask a question or make a comment, and we'd love to hear from you. Lou Friedman with us by phone. Hi, Lou. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, how are you today? I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm great. I'm really enjoying your book. Now, I haven't finished every chapter, but I've gotten through probably three quarters of it. I'm really enjoying it.
Did it make you want to run out and cut down a tree?
Well, I've cut down a few trees in my day.
Yeah, you've got to probably keep that fireplace going, right?
Actually, back in the day, the fireplace I've got now, you just sort of click a little box and it lights up on gas.
I got one of those myself.
But the fireplace I had before that was one of those, and so yeah, I cut a lot of dead trees, frankly, up and enjoyed it. How did you get interested in this area?
Well, actually, I was one of those people who were introduced to timber sports by television over the years, you know, with the Wide World of Sports and all that. So I always thought it was intriguing. And I, at one point earlier this decade, I was the outdoors writer for the Chicago Tribune. Yep. And I convinced them that speed cutting was an outdoors activity. And so they sent me to Hayward to write a big feature about the championships in 2001, and that was back a few years later. And then I thought, hey, this could be a really cool book story. And I was back there for their 50th anniversary event in 2009 now.
Yeah.
That's what brought me to Hayward, and I always had a good time there, not to mention the Big Muskie.
Well, yeah, I'm a charter member of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, and Hayward, my name is emblazoned inside that muskie up by its mouth, over on the left side of its mouth.
Well, that's probably one of the more interesting buildings in the United States. I can unfortunately not claim to have ever caught a muskie, even though it's a mixed metaphor. Muskie are my albatross. But I've always had fun in Hayward.
Oh, yeah. It's always a lot of fun in Hayward, no matter when you're up there. We get up there quite a few times. I do a little musky fishing in that area and some hunting.
You'll probably catch one.
Yeah, I've caught more than 100.
Wow.
I'm over 100.
Oh, my.
So I know guys who've caught, you know, five times that. But I think 100 is pretty good.
Absolutely. I'm impressed.
I've never done any log rolling. And that's part of the Lumberjack World Championship.
And a totally different challenge.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about the history of the whole thing, but what kinds of events make up this competition for those who've never really seen it? well, on TV or in person?
Well, you mentioned log rolling, and those are logs that are, you know, in the water, in a pond, where people do try to balance, and they're on there against an opponent who, through their own guile and fast footwork, try to spin them into the water as well. And it's one of those challenges that came out of the old logging camps when the guys were probably bored or tired from their day of work, and they probably, you know, it was part of their day of work where they had to sometimes move logs and downstream, and so they would typically challenge one another to see who is the best at something. And I'm sure that's how every one of these events got started, whether, you know, because they involved how quickly they could trim a tree, how quickly they could chop wood down, and how, you know, one-on-one type of things, and I can do it better than you.
And that's how this whole thing probably originally got started.
I think so, and I think that in that case, I think it's a little bit like rodeo, which is really a working man's occupation, and has evolved into a modern sport, and probably from the same types of challenges with the guys out there on the range doing their thing, and saying, "Oh, I can do it faster than you." that's the way it is, you know, with guys. I mean, probably since the first Neanderthal guys probably tried to outrun one another and outlift something. and then they probably took up boxing too.
You're probably right.
That's how it all probably got started.
Well, you know, here we've got it on my Facebook page. There's something from Joe Lynch who says my soon-to-be father-in-law is a world record holder in the lumberjack competition, especially in Hayward. Rick Halverson. Being backstage in Hayward during competition with all the worldwide competitors, and their amazing line of saws and axes is really astonishing. Behind scenes, they're all one big family.
Oh, there's no question about that. But Rick is also prominently featured in the book with his wife Penny.
Yeah,
and their exploits over the years at different times they were the all around champions for men and women.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier the testosterone and everything, but the women have gotten themselves involved in it too, and that came along at some point.
It was a gradual thing. In the beginning, it was just log roll, and I think, you know, we're talking about the early 60s time period of when the Lumberjacks championships began to evolve and grow, and, you know, women wanted to get in on it too, but, you know, we still had a pretty chauvinistic society where, I mean, if you were well aware of women, the history of women's sports before the advent of Title IX, the whole theory was it was bad for women to sweat.
Yeah.
And they belong in the kitchen, and of course, as time went on, women wanted to have their own events and competitions, and they were ultimately added.
Lou Friedman, our guest today, author of Timber, The Story of Lumberjack World Championships, and it's a great book. I really enjoyed reading it, and you may have some questions for him as we move along today, as we talk about Tony Wise, as we talk about Hayward and the World Championships. We'll get a little musky fishing in as well, and there's an interesting guy, J.R. Salzman, who I want to talk about as well, who is featured in the book today. And certainly join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question or comment there at the Larry Mueller Show. We always had lumberjacks. Were there lumberjills? I mean, were there a lot of women involved back in the day?
I don't think they ever were. I think they were sort of banned from the camps completely. No women. If there were any that were cooks, I don't even know about that, because, you know, the history of it seemed to indicate they didn't want any women around as distractions during these long days of work, and they all shared, you know, bunk houses, so there was no privacy. You know, when you went to sleep, you were in a bed, and the guy next to you was in a bed, and you had about 2 square feet of space, I guess, for your stuff. So I don't think they wanted any women around the camps.
Yeah, and it was a dangerous Well, it still is. I mean, but not nearly as bad as now as it was back in the day. It was a very dangerous business to be in.
Well, that's the reason for the whole existence of that word timber. Get out of the way. That's what they were telling you, and themselves, so that nobody got hurt when the tree fell.
Yeah, and that was among other things, and drowning, and getting cut, and oh my goodness.
It's a very dangerous profession.
Robert in Shell Lake, let's go to you. Hi, Robert.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was curious, I thought that the term log rolling was actually burrowing a log. Is that correct or not?
That is correct.
It is correct.
Yes. They're sort of synonyms.
The reason I brought it up is, as a kid, I grew up in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, and 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, I was in a town called Libby, Montana, and went to work for a company called J. Neal's Lumber Company, and wound up working on the ponds, and they had enormous ponds, 4 to 6 acre ponds, 4 to 6 feet deep, that they dumped the logs in. And part of the job was wearing caulk boots and running on the logs and booming them so that they could pull them into the sawmill. And, of course, all those things are now automated, but I feel fortunate that I had an opportunity to do that.
Do you have good balance?
Must have had good balance.
Well, you had to have balance, but you also carried what they call pike poles for balance.
Yeah, yeah. Big wide poles that stretched out on several feet on either side.
Exactly.
Did you get wet at all?
Three times in one night.
Three times in one night. That's probably more swimming than you were bargaining for.
Well, the trouble was in the winter, even though the ponds were somewhat heated, the logs would freeze together.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I'd love to hear some more about this. We have to take a short break, and we will be back. And, Robert, maybe you can hang on. If not, I hope you'll call in with your questions and comments here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When you hear the word lumberjack, do you think of Paul Bunyan or maybe a Monty Python song? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along on the Ideas Network. Lumberjacks might seem like a part of history and even myth. The World Lumberjack Championship gives modern-day lumberjacks and lumberjills a chance to compete and for us to admire their abilities in action. Lou Friedman has written a history of the games, and he's really happy to answer your questions when you call in. That number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us a comment at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to see a photo if you've got one. Maybe you've been in Hayward for that championship. Like the page while you're there, and we'll send you regular updates. Back after the news. So happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Pleased to have you with us as we talk about the latest book that we're discussing, Timber, the Story of the Lumberjack World Championships. It's written by Lou Friedman. Great to have him with us by phone. And certainly if you have questions about lumberjacks, the world championships. Maybe you've got some questions about Hayward and the Hayward area. Maybe questions about Tony Wise, the guy who was really responsible for getting these championships going, or just about the events in general. I hope you'll call in. Maybe you've got an experience to share at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. We would certainly love to hear from you. And we have Adele in Sturgeon Bay, who's been waiting quite a long time, Lou. So I'm going to go to her. Adele, hi. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi. It's good to talk to you. Way back in 1958, my husband and I were counselors at a YMCA Camp Manitowish in Boulder Junction. And on the first day, the counselors had a little bit of free time, and we were sent down to the water to do a little playing around with the burling log. And my husband, who was watching, my husband-to-be, who was watching from the shore, was astounded at how I was knocking off all the girls and many of the guys. And he decided, I think this bear's looking into. And that resulted in 51 years of marriage now. And I, the camp, I understand, no longer uses the burling log. I guess the insurance liability became too huge. But it was sure fun in those days. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, it's a great story. Lou, comment?
They say that the loggers and the log rollers say it's expanding and actually growing, even if they don't use it at that camp. There's some of the real serious practitioners have been trying to spread the word and spread the logs through the state into other locations.
Well, I think it was in those days very dangerous because if you fell, you could have hit your head on the dock or the or whatever. But it was still an awful lot of fun, and I can still remember trying to reverse the direction of the log with my feet. And if the person wasn't agile enough, they were in the drink quite quickly.
Well, they say that the athletes who are the best at it say that if you introduce kids to it when they're young, they like it. They all like it right away.
Well, I can say that I love it, and I regret that none of my children or grandchildren have had this opportunity. I wish they would have had the opportunity I have. And my husband never got aboard the log either, but he always tells the story about the girl who dropped off all the guys, and he checked her out a little thoroughly.
It's a great story, Adele. Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it.
That's why they got married.
Yeah, that is a great story. You may have a story, too. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Let's talk about Tony Wise, because I think without Tony, a lot of what we have now in Hayward and these world championships just wouldn't be.
That's probably true. I mean, who knows what else would might have happened in his absence, but he was the man, and he's the one who came back from World War II and wanted to put his home community on the map in one way or another, and he sounds like he was a born promoter. You know, he was interested in developing skiing in that area and helped create the Birkebeiner.
He created it, I think.
Yep, the Lumberjack World Championships. I mean, he didn't invent muskie, but he was certainly aware of that as an attraction and tried to link his own experiences and thoughts for promoting the area to the popularity of fishing. And, I mean, he had an entire a village going on that he created. And he had very good relations with the local Indian tribes and employed a lot of the people and was interested in explaining the history of the area.
Yeah, so he had a sort of a history, living history area, several acres.
Yes.
And employed a lot of natives in probably ahead of his time in that. He was ahead of his time in a lot of things, wasn't he?
Exactly. I was going to say the Telemark Ski Lodge, the Birkebeiner. It's just that, Hayward is not a big community. I mean, it's only got, a couple thousand people?
2,500, yeah.
And I actually used to think it was bigger just because I knew the name so prominently. But he was the one who behind the efforts to just make it a destination for tourism.
And he certainly succeeded. Janine in Decorah, Iowa, has a comment or question for you. Hi, Janine.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
when is this held, the lumberjack competition?
Okay.
Every year in July, usually around the third week in July.
Okay.
They have a website, and I'm sure they would even have those dates on it right now for the next one. They do get people who come from all over.
Now, that's probably the same weekend we have our big Nordic Fest down here.
Probably.
That's a possibility. It's usually around the third week.
Okay. Well, they give me a good excuse to get out of town.
Yeah, it would.
It would be entertaining for you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, and Merry Christmas. And
to you as well. Thank you very much for calling. Yeah, you know, it's when some of these events, I think Tony at one point he thought, well, the Birkebeiner, if we could ever get 4,000 or 5,000 people, I think that was sort of his main goal at one point. They had like 50 people for the first one.
And it just exceeded even his expectations, and he was an optimist.
Yeah, and he was a real optimist, and I know they didn't have. He wound up renting, or not even renting, but letting people sleep in his barn and everything else.
When they were, he was at times they were more popular than the facilities could accommodate.
Yeah, absolutely. Chuck in Lake Dalton, your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Thank you. Hi. Say, I've had an opportunity to cut down a few trees in my time. You know, sometimes good and sometimes bad. I've also had the opportunity to use a two-man chainsaw. What I wanted to ask you about is your comments on the unlimited chainsaw class at the competitions.
Oh, those are amazing.
Well, yeah, unlimited isn't even the word. They're modified to with even more power than most people can imagine. When you say, are you thinking maybe they should have limits? Or,
I think it's the most fascinating thing I've ever seen. You know, put an Evinrude outboard motor on a chainsaw. That's got to be the ultimate in cutting trees.
And it's the ultimate in power, that's for sure. But that's one reason they can cut through those big fat logs in seconds.
Well, they use snowmobile motors too, don't they?
Yes. It's sort of in the eye of the creator. You know, if you can think of a good way to modify it and make it more efficient, then people try to invent new things and try new things.
Yeah, well, I remember my experience with a two-man chainsaw, and you didn't want to be in the far man when the chain broke.
But no.
Yeah.
You sent some wood chips flying, too, I bet.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just close your eyes and hang on, you know.
They do make sawdust pretty fast.
Oh.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. Thanks a lot for calling. Wow. David in Stillwater, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, David.
Hi. I'd just like to mention my thanks to Tony Weiss for developing that ski area up there. That's where I met my wife. Skiing in the Rathskeller. We were down on dancing on a table at the time.
Before or after you met, were you dancing on the table?
Yeah. Well, that was before.
Okay.
and then
you were dancing together on the table.
Yeah, that didn't stop us.
There you go.
Getting married didn't stop us.
Oh, boy.
We didn't start acting respectable till sometime later.
Well, he used to have a big, it used to be a big thing to come on New Year's Eve.
Oh, yeah.
To Hayward for the rest.
I remember going up there with a big bag of confetti and distributing that, and the place went nuts, and we've been picking confetti out of our clothes for the last 20 years.
There you go. Did that, and if he came in the summer, you were picking the sawdust out of him.
Yeah. And Tony was a guy, he recognized at one point, he started out, he was kind of appealing or trying to appeal to the little bit older population or the local population, and realized he needed to sort of change his marketing to go after younger people.
Exactly. He was a very innovative, savvy guy and a big picture, big idea man. And I kind of wonder if he had anything else up his sleeve before he passed away, if there was one more great grand scheme that he could have used to promote Hayward. But I guess nothing's ever come to light on that.
Yeah, but His New Year's Eve, I think you do write about that, his New Year's Eve parties were a legend, where he'd have thousands of people there for.
That's when he had even underestimated the attendance on those.
Wow. And how is he, you know, how do people in that area view him? Is he viewed with a lot of respect? And
I believe so. I mean, there may have been a time where he was sort of, if not out of favor, but he's just sort of out of the limelight. But the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the Lumberjacks, he was on everybody's mind. He was talked about and praised, and they unveiled an official landmark that was testimony to his, you know, he's saying that we owe Tony for this.
Yeah, and he was basically wanted to start that Lumberjack World Championship in order just to bring more people there.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he just figured it would make a lot of sense because, you know, the timber industry was big, and historical in that area, and it seemed to be an event that had that kind of roots that would make sense to be linked to Hayward.
When they say world championships, they mean it, I think. How did it come to be truly a global competition, and where do the competitors travel to be there?
Well, there's a lot of guys who there's this pipeline that's been going on for decades now, especially from down under in Australia and New Zealand. They're regulars who come year after year after year, and they really put the world in world championships on a regular basis. There have been other competitors from other parts of the world at various times, but as always, the best competitors in the from around the United States make sure they make the pilgrimage there every July. But the stiffest competition and some of the best competitors through time have been from New Zealand and Australia. And Jason Windward may be the best lumberjack competitor of all time. He's from New Zealand.
Yeah, but to get it going, I think Tony had to get on the phone essentially, didn't he?
No, what he did recognize was that he didn't know the people, the names, at that time himself. So he reached out to someone who was prominent, Dave Gear, and got him to start spreading the word that, hey, they're going to start this event in Hayward, and you want to be there, and the prize money will be such and such, and, you know, we promise they'll treat you good when you get here. Then once everybody showed up and it all came true and that they weren't just idle promises, then the word of mouth spread and spread and spread and said, you know, it's become a thing where, well, this time of year, I've got to be there.
Yep, there you go. Dick in Waukesha. Let's turn to you now. Hi, Dick.
Hi. Back in 1952, I was pretty new to the Forest Service. I had a few years, and I was working at a little research unit out of Michigan State campus with the Forest Service operation. And the boss bought I didn't know about it, but he trotted out with help, a two-man chainsaw. It probably wasn't Evinrude. I don't know. Weighed 65 pounds and had handlebars on it like a motorcycle. And then a kind of a grip on the other end, a little stinger with a looked like a bicycle handle, you know, handlebar handle, only bigger. And we went up into a woodlot. It was a company woodlot that let us work in there. We're supposed to thin the get rid of the stuff that we wanted to get rid of and leave what was left. Well, we didn't stay very long because everything there was sprouts. They're probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years old.
Hmm.
We could cut them all right, but it was dumb, you know.
How was it to wield that saw?
Well, it was no fun.
65 pounds and no lightweight material.
That's right. We weren't having any fun, and we didn't have any safety gear at all, you know.
Yeah.
There wasn't any such thing in the business at that time, 1952.
Machinery is more efficient these days.
Yeah. So anyway, we just decided the heck this is we're not doing any good, and we went back.
I guess it was too early for you to turn pro in Hayward.
Yes, right. I did once in forestry school another guy and I tried to do the burling. We were going to have a competition, and we didn't even have a dock to get off or anything, any training. We floated around in the pond, and I'd hold the log, and the other guy'd get on, and then I'd try to get on and dump him, and then he'd do the same for me.
Well, you could take consolation in the fact that usually the same people who wield 65-pound chainsaws aren't the log rollers.
No.
Usually two different body types involved in that.
Yeah.
I wasn't the body type, even. I was skinny. But
well, you might have been the UL if you were skinny. That's probably more the log rolling type, isn't it, Lou?
Yeah, although I guess if you can't get up on it to start with, it's kind of a drawback.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And Tom in Manitowoc, we'll get to you in just a second. Well, maybe we can just do it right now. No, we'll get you in a minute. The competition, so there's the axing using an axe. And actually,
those
let's go.
A lot of big, strong guys in those events.
Man, the muscles, those are athletes.
Those guys, yeah. And, you know, and certainly back in those days, nobody lifted weights for this event. They just chopped.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much they mix in right now. I mean, it is more sport than, I mean, most of the time, certainly in the beginning, the people who were competing were people who did work in the forest. We've seen a transition for these people to just be professional athletes and have other professions on the side, maybe. Although the many still work in wood in some way,
yeah.
But it's not like they were you know, lumberjacks out there in for months at a time. And the industry's changed too, of course, with the automation and all, and minimized. But I mean, the people have the same mindset, but they, you know, they're athletes who might be lifting weights now instead of just chopping to build their muscles.
Tom in Manitowoc, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. You just answered my question. I wanted to ask about the lumberjacks, and being that axes are no longer used, what the people do to work out. But my second one was when they have the pole racing contest and they run up the pole with the spikes and they just about free fall all the way down to the very bottom, how do they avoid not getting splinters that are obviously made in the pole from the spikes?
Yeah.
Well, I do see most guys use gloves and knee pads, and that helps a little bit. When they're flying down there, they're not even touching it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that free fall, as you describe, is the right way to describe it. And at least they land on mats.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise they'd be splintered into pieces themselves. But they are wearing gloves for grip, and I think that also helps them prevent, you know, getting those splinters. And the ones who wear knee pads as well are, they actually, it's not the most attractive uniform. It kind of looks, but I mean, it's practical.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. But thanks, Tom, for calling. Brian in Monona emailed us, by the way, and this goes back to earlier we were talking kind of the history of the logging camps and whether or not women were in logging camps. Brian says, my great-grandmother was a logging camp cook in Berrigan County, Michigan, for about 10 years. He said women were common as logging camp cooks, and none of the men dared mess with them or they would starve.
I figured if they were there at all, it would be as cooks. But and all the photos and all the things that I reviewed on the history and all the books, I never saw a picture of one woman.
Isn't that amazing?
But and the general rule was that they didn't want women there. But that would have been the role. And the cooks had a lot of power. Those guys needed a zillion calories a day to survive. And if the cook said, well, you know, we ran out of this, they had the power to punish. So if they were rude to them, I would think that that would be a way to retaliate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you have a favorite event at these championships?
You know, I don't have one particularly, but because I do like to watch those guys, you know, chop wood with their own power and with the axes more than the saws themselves. So that's the thing probably that impresses me the most is watching that. They're all every event is challenging, but those are the ones I think I find the most enjoyable to look at.
Yeah, they're and one of the people that I wanted to talk about a little bit, we never really got into it, was J.R. Salzman.
Oh yes, J.R. sort of is a worthy sports hero, a young man who served over in Iraq, lost one of his arms in an explosion, made a comeback to, he had been a world champion in the log rolling for several years before he went into the Army, and came home and had to adjust to civilian life, and it was very, very important to him to be able to make a full comeback, and he did so. It was when he did for the first time, and I believe he's won again since then. It was one of the most dramatic things I've ever seen in sports, and moving for the entire arena brought people to tears to see him make that kind of comeback.
Yeah, an amazing story, and his and you have several. One of the nice things I think about your book too is the photos. You've got some great photos, and there's some photos of him and his wife too, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And they've had a baby since, too.
Yeah, and but then other other photos of the competition. And did you take any of those? Or?
I did. I mean, obviously, I didn't take the ones from 50 years ago because I wasn't there then.
Right, sure.
But ones from more recently, I took many of those.
Well, I tell you what, you have done a marvelous job. I really enjoyed the book, Lou. And
well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I've got about three chapters to go. I skipped a couple in the middle because I wanted to get to the end and hear more about JR. But wonderful book. Thank you so much for being with us today and talking about it.
And thank you for having me.
Appreciate it very much. Lou Friedman, prize-winning sports writer, former sports editor, the author of several books, his most recent, published by the University of Wisconsin Press, is titled Timber, the Story of Lumberjack World Championships, and some great sub-stories, subplots in there with Tony Wise, a little bit about the muskie fishing and the great muskie of Hayward, the plastic muskie, of which I'm inside. It's a fun read for sure. And just to take a look ahead to see what's tomorrow, Phil Pelletieri joins us. Entomologist Phil, talk about the insects and what critters might have hitched a ride indoors on your Christmas tree. What do you think of that? He'll be back. He'll be with us tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.